everybody. My name's Lexi. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is January 7th, 2011. I am not from Florida. I was born in New York. I was born in upstate New York. And I grew up with my mom. She raised me. Both my parents were in my life for a long time. And I had a good relationship with my dad, but my mom raised me. So, and she was no joke. She had like two jobs just to make sure that, you know, we had a nice place to live and we had food on the table. And she was a hard worker and she taught me, you know, how to grow up right. And we had a very strong relationship and I love her very much. So it was just her and I for a long time. And then she met this guy and they got married. And I was really upset because I didn't want to share her with anybody. And then one day she told me that she was pregnant. And I was really pissed off about that because then that means I had to share her with somebody else. And I was told that I was going to have a baby sister. And I just had no interest in having anybody around. And then my sister was born. And from the day that she was born, she has meant, she's my heart. She means more to me than anybody in this world. So we all were, you know, we're this nice, happy family. My dad would still, you know, come see me, spend time with me. And I had a very normal normal upbringing. There was no problems. There was a lot of love. There was a lot of support. The only, not normal thing was, for me, I was told like there was no like napping, there was no like downtime. You like had to do something all the time. So that was weird. I don't think I took a nap till I was like 25 years old. And it was amazing. But anyway, but that's what you did. You did well in school. They paid for me to go to a private Catholic school. So like, you know, you gotta do a good job. You gotta get on the honor roll. Which I was. I was class president. I was team captain for soccer, softball. I played fast pitch softball for a long time. And that was my life. And I wasn't a drinker. I wasn't a partier. I mean, there was no, like, room for error. Because, again, I knew that my life would be over if I ever, you know, was caught drinking or doing anything like that. So there was one time, the first time I remember drinking was... I was asked to go to this dance, and I was asked to go to this dance with this boy, and I really liked him. And I found out that he said he wanted to go with somebody prettier, and like I broke down, and I was really upset about it. And the only way I knew how to cope was we were at a party, and somebody was drinking, and I had never had anything in my life, and it was Bacardi Limon, whatever. So stupid, but I got absolutely wasted. And I was so sick, and I had a game the next day. And because my mom had never seen me drinking, you know, she sees me like throwing up like on third base, and she's like, "What's wrong with you?" And I was like, "Nothing, I'm sick." And that was my first experience with drinking, but it was also my first time realizing that that was a real quick fix for me to not feel anything, to not feel any kind of pain. It just kind of takes everything away. But I had too much going on at the time, so I knew that I couldn't do that anymore. I focused on school. I worked really hard to get into, you know, my first choice college. Sports, that was, like I said, that was a big thing for me. I got to play soccer and fast pitch softball, not just around the country, but I got to go to Europe and play in Europe. And that, I loved my life. That was so important to me. It's, you know, I played year-round. That's who I was. And so when I got accepted into college, I had gotten recruited to play at D1 and D2 schools, but I really wanted to go to Boston. I actually wanted to really go to New York City, but my parents wouldn't let me go there. But they said, "You can go to Boston." So I found a school that's right in downtown Boston. It was called Suffolk University, or still is. And I mean, it's amazing. I don't know if anybody here has been to Boston or is familiar, but my school was right in downtown. And it was an amazing experience. I felt so blessed just to be able to go to school in like this really cool city, and I got to play sports, and I was really excited about like the next part of my life. And The deal when I was growing up was my mom was going to raise me and my dad was going to pay for my college because he made the money. My dad worked in New York City and he made a lot of money. But my first semester in to college, my dad called me and said that he decided to get married instead. So what that means is he was going to take all of his money and put it towards his fancy, you know, like, I think it was in Florida, 7-day cruise wedding, and he wasn't going to help me pay for school. So and when you're 19, you can't be, like, a dependent, so I had nobody to help me pay for school. And I was living in the dorms that's right in downtown, and they're like, you have to leave. And I had nowhere to go. And my mom's like, you know, just come back home. We'll get you into, another school next semester. And I didn't want to do that. I had no interest in going back home. I felt like I had worked so hard to get where I was now. And at the time, I'm a very stubborn person. You tell me to do something, especially if that sounds like a good idea, I'm not going to do it. Not only am I not going to do it, I'm going to do the exact opposite of that. And that's what I did. I decided to stay in the city. I have a stepbrother through my mom's marriage, and he had an apartment there, so he let me crash there for a couple weeks till I got my own place because Suffolk kicked me out. Literally, they took all my stuff and, put me on the street. So it was really sad. But I got my own apartment, and so I'm, 19, but Boston's very expensive, and you can't just, live there and not make any money. So I had to find a job, and, the only thing that made sense at the time was, well, why don't you just go be a server? So I got really good jobs, actually, at some of these really nice places, Boston Harbor Hotel, all these, fancy restaurants, and I was making good money. I mean, I made a lot of money from, 19 to 24, three times as much as I make now as, a career person. It's, retarded. But, and when you're 19 and you've never really had, I never really had a job because I played sports, I thought that that was real money. It's not real money. When you're pulling in, $1,200, in, 3 days, that's not real money. Maybe it is to some people. I don't know. Good for you. But that wasn't, I thought that that's what people made every day, and it's not. I don't make that today. But anyway, so so I'm, blowing money. We go out to dinners. We do, going shopping. And, I have a nice place. And like I said, I'm 19. And, the cool thing, for me, the cool thing at 19 was, when you work in a bar or when you work, in the service industry, Boston's a small enough town where, especially in that kind of industry, you get to know you get to know all the players. You get to know the promoters, the other bartenders, nightclub owners. And especially if you're a girl and you hang out with other girls, it's really easy to get into places. So drinking was, having access to drinking was never an issue. I mean, I used to get my ID taken away all the time, and then they'd let me in. So they'd take away my ID, but they'd still let me in. So it was just never a problem. So that's what I did. I was a waitress, and the nice places that would let me work for them, I was that kind of drinker when it happened the first time. As soon as I start drinking, there's no stopping. And, I don't think I'm a big person, but I'll drink a 250-pound man because I just can't stop. There's no stopping. And it doesn't matter if I get sick. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. I don't have an off button. In fact, it was more exciting to me that that was the case because, who knows where the night's going to go? I don't know. Let's make it real exciting. And you have a problem when, the kind of liquors and the kinds of things you need to drink for, this to happen or, this situation to happen. And, that's where I was at. If I wanted things to get weird, we were going to have vodka and tequila, and that's what would happen. So, I knew that. I was one of those drinkers that, when I drank, if I was with a group of people, in my mind, I don't know if anybody has ever had this experience, but in my head, I'd say, okay, Lexi, you've had too much now and you have to go. But I wouldn't say that out loud. I wouldn't tell anybody that. So I would just I'd be with everybody and we'd all be having a good time. And then out of nowhere, I would just leave. So nobody knew where I went. I'm in the middle of the city. I'm wasted. Sometimes I get home. Sometimes. And I started to drink like that on the job before, because I started bartending, but before I started bartending, I used to drink like that when I was waitressing. And, you know, for anybody in here who's ever been a bartender or server, usually you keep your money on you. So this one night, I had like, I think it was like New Year's, I had like $2,000 worth of cash, like, on me. And we started drinking champagne in the back. And, like, that was just hitting me really hard. And I think we had, like, 4 bottles of champagne. And I decided to do that thing where I'm like, okay, it's time for you to go. But I wasn't done working. We weren't done with, I think it was, like, 11 o'clock at night. So I'm walking around downtown with, like, my, like, uniform on. I still have, like, the thing, you know, where you put the check. And my manager's like, where is Lexi? And nobody knew where I, like, they got concerned. Like, people are calling people. Where is this girl? Like, is she being kidnapped? Like, where'd she go? And then I just kind of, like, stroll in. like 3 hours later, like, you can't ever do that ever again. And, you know, somebody had to do all my cash because they thought I had, like, stolen the money, and I didn't. I was just dicking around outside. I don't even know where I went. But that's the kind of shit that I would, sorry, that's the kind of stuff I would do all the time. And so I would get fired from nice places, and then I'd have to go get another job. So I got really over being a waitress, and I was like, I'm going to go be a bartender. So I got this job bartending at this Irish pub. I mean, Boston's full of Irish pubs, but like this was like a real one, because like all the people in there were like legit from Ireland. And they, you know, were not legal citizens of this country. And it was a real Irish bar. And it was great. I mean, not for nothing. There was a lot of good times I had. I mean, I am really lucky because I put myself in a lot of situations that could have gone really horribly. And I'm sure sometimes it did. I don't even know. But anyway, so there was another bartender that I worked with. And I do, every time I describe him, you know, I'm sure you've met, even if you're a guy, I'm sure you've seen this guy being in bars. It's that guy bartender who thinks he's so cool. He's just like the shit. And he thinks he's funny. And he usually is funny. And he's like, he's just the man. Well, he needed to be my boyfriend. And we started dating. And, I mean, he was a mess. But he was funny. He was outgoing. He wasn't really nice. But I like that. I needed to have that. So we were dating for probably like a year and a half, and you know his drinking, you know, it concerned me because he, you know, I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I didn't really understand. Like I just didn't know anything about it, and I just thought he just had like, you know, that's what he did because he was Irish, and I mean I'm Irish too, but like that's just how they do. I don't know. But I mean, it was concerning because I love this person, I wanted to be with this person, and I was just hoping that if I just showed him how much I loved him and cared about him, that his drinking would go away. And like, I really believed that. I really thought that that's how it could work. And it didn't. If anything, my drinking got worse. My parents started to get concerned because, you know, they saw how I was drinking, and it was a nightmare, you know. So we come, you know, home for Christmas, and we're a total shit show. And but you know, in all that, we decided that because he was an illegal immigrant, we were going to get married. And when I say that, it's not like the nice, pretty, oh, this is my dress, and here's my ring, this is a beautiful story. No. There was none of that. There was no proposal. I didn't even have a ring. But what we decided to do was we went downtown one day, and we got married in Boston City Hall. And the plan was that we were just going to do that so that he could get his green card, and we were going to move to Ireland because he had family over there. He had land over there. So that really was our plan. And we started to make that happen, and we both quit our jobs and we bought tickets to go over there, and we were married. And probably like a year into our relationship, you know, it had started to, I mean, we were both very sick. It was very abusive. He was very abusive. And again, it was just that thing, like I didn't know what to do, and I would just hope that it would get better. So one night, our friends threw us like a going away party, and because we were moving to Ireland together, and we both, I think, within the first hour, just got completely wrecked, and we got into a big fight because we fought a lot, and it was, you know, he had definitely put his hands on me before, but this time he really, he gave it to me pretty good. And we had been living with my mom because we were like two weeks away from moving to Ireland. So I show up at my mom's house, my face is all jacked up, and she's like, "What happened?" And it was the first time, I'm a terrible liar. I get bright red in the face, I stutter, I just don't do it. So I started to do that, and she just knew. And I grew up knowing that, you know, you never let anybody put their hands on you. And I knew that, and I knew the relationship was going to have to be over, and I was a mess. And I was in such a bad place that growing up like that and knowing that and having him do that, I was still going to stay. And, like, thinking back to that, like, it's so sad to me, like, how bad I was with, you know, my self-esteem, my self-worth, how I valued myself, you know, but that's where I was at. So she kicks him out, we get a divorce, I'm a mess, I'm now drinking all day, and, you know, I'm a total wreck at my house. I'm living with my mom and my sister, who I love more than anything, and, you know, my sister's like 13 at the time. And she has to, you know, my mom gets to go to bed, but she stays up with me at night. So, you know, I'm running around the house with, like, no pants on, and I'm like a maniac, and she has to, like, watch her sister be ridiculous. And she's always looked up to me, so that was really hard for her. So I kind of started to get my stuff back together. I went back to school finally, and then I met this other guy. And he was wonderful. Like, this one was a good one. He was normal. He wasn't a drinker. Like, that typical, like, all-American white kid. And, like, that's what he was. So, but when we would go out, in the beginning, I was still drinking like I would with my ex-husband. And that just, like, totally... that was not okay with him. And he told me right away, he's like, "If you want to have a relationship with me, you got to either sort whatever you got going on out, or we just can't be together." And I really cared about him, and I knew that he was good for me because he was a good person. So I, you know, tried to behave as much as I could, and I definitely got better. You know, I wasn't blacked, you know, I wasn't a blackout every night, you know, but our relationship was like this. You know, I only was the designated driver on, I think, his birthday. His birthday. Yep. Definitely not our anniversary. Definitely, yep. But yeah, it was just his birthday. So that's what our relationship was like, you know, him like holding me and like making sure that I get home and taking off my clothes because I can, and just, you know, this poor kid, he had to take care of me. And, but I loved him very much, and when we were together, I went back to school, I got a normal job, I worked in, you know, actually worked at a children's hospital, and on the surface, everything looked great. Normal boyfriend, doing really good in school, have a job, pay my bills, have my own place, but I'm still a mess, you know. I can make things look really pretty, and I can pretend and save face really well, but nothing's changed, you know, how I feel about myself and my relationships with people. And but like I said, I was really good at that. And when we were together, I got really sick, and they prescribed me opiates. I loved how that guy, that Nick, you said opiates. That was so like pleasant and lovely. You did a great job, by the way. He really did. I thought it was great. But they did. They prescribed me opiates, and I had tried drugs here and there, but that wasn't my thing. It was drinking. And but as soon as I tried opiates, I mean, I was done. And I was a doctor shopper. I did that a lot. But up north, it's very different than down here, where we don't have access to, like, drugs, like pill drugs, like you guys do. We have heroin. And my dealer at the time, he had run out of my, you know, my pills, and he said, "Well, why don't you just try some heroin?" And I said, At first I said no. And he's like, look, just to hold you over, just try it. You're going to be fine, and I'll get your pills and whatever. So I tried it. I got really sick. And I was like, dude, I can't do it again. He's like, no, that's what's supposed to happen. Try it again. And I did it again. But then, after I did it again, I was hooked. I was done. So in my head at the time, I'm like, no, this is perfect because I can't drink like I used to because the opiates were making me feel so sick. This is a perfect balance. I can do some drugs and I can like save face with my boyfriend and just have like three glasses of wine. But that's a lot more normal than, a bottle and a half of wine. Like, that's better, right? Like, in my mind, that was better. So, same thing. He had no idea. He had no idea I was into pills. He had no idea I was using heroin. Nobody had any idea. What they became aware of was I was completely changing as a person. I could still show up to things, but I wasn't there. I would not be able to, have like a genuine or authentic conversation with somebody with any like real feeling or emotion. But to me, because my body was there, that means I was present. But I wasn't. And it was just really sad to my family because, we had all been so close for such a long time. They just saw me slowly slipping away. And they had seen it for a while with the drinking, but once I added the two, it was a very fast road downhill. So Christmas 2010, I went home with my boyfriend, and it was supposed to be like a lovely holiday. And I, was using heroin on a daily basis, drinking on a daily basis, and my sister thought it was really weird because I kept walking around my house with my purse. And if anybody's a drug addict in here, when like you have your drugs, you keep them on you. Well, for me, they did not leave like a foot radius at any time of the day. So I was carrying them around in my house, my purse, like for hours. My sister's like, put down your purse. What are you doing? So I went in the bathroom I had to put it down, and she takes it. She looks at my purse because she knew something was wrong. My sister knows me enough that she knew something was wrong. And she found my drugs. And I was so out of it because I had decided to get creative and start mixing cocaine and heroin towards the end. And that really, I could not keep that looking cool at all. And the funniest thing is, just like drinking too, like, I thought I was fine. I thought everything was fine. Like, I thought I looked fine. But, I'm like, tweaking out everywhere. But I think I'm fine. My parents are like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, really in my mind, I'm like, nothing. I'm totally cool. But, like, I was a mess. So apparently what had happened, I found this out later, Christmas Eve, she had to, like, tell my boyfriend, tell my mom. Nobody knew that it was heroin, but they found something that was not legal. And they didn't know what to do. So they let me have Christmas Day, and everybody was acting really weird, but I just thought I was being really paranoid. But everybody looked so sad. I'm like, guys, it's Christmas. Why is everybody so sad? And now I know why everybody was so sad. And then the day after Christmas, I come downstairs to everybody sitting in our living room, those days when you've like really messed up and you come down and there's like a group of people, either your friends or your family, and they're like, we need to talk about last night. Like, that would happen all the time. So I just thought it was another like session of that. So I was like, what happened? And they're like, well, this one was different because we found your drugs. And I think I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, please don't even try and say they're not yours or whatever. I was like, listen, Mom, I was just trying things out. It was not a big deal. I got it for New Year's, just made up a bunch of stuff. And, like, they knew. They knew that for a while. They knew something was wrong, but, like, my mom thought I was, like, a narcoleptic. She thought I, like, had an eating disorder. Like, they were trying to figure out all these things, like, taking me to the doctors, and I knew the whole time. So they're like, so this is the deal. you either get to go to treatment now, like literally now, or we're going to call the cops and have you arrested today. And I was like, okay, well, that's retarded. I'm not going either place. I'm going to go upstairs and go to bed. So I walked away. I think I told my mom, there's children here. I said some really not nice things to my mom, and I don't talk to her like that. And when I woke up, my family was getting ready to take me to the police station. And I ran out of the room. My sister ran after me, and she literally begged me to go to rehab. And she's just like, I love you so much. I look up to you so much. And I cannot see my, you know, big sister taken away in handcuffs today. So for me, you don't want to do it for you, that's fine. Do it for me. And I said yes. Because if anybody's going to get me, it's her. And so, but I said, listen, before we do that, you're going to probably have to take me to the hospital. And that's when I had to fess up and tell them that it was actually, you know, heroin and it could be potentially dangerous because I was not moving at that point. And so I went to the hospital and I was in ICU for 6 days and I was in the hospital for 10 before rehab because I stopped breathing. Now, why I stopped breathing, it wasn't just because of the drugs. It was because, you know, like I said, in my mind, when I started drugs, my drinking was great. No, I stopped breathing because I was withdrawing from alcohol. Like, that's how messed up. And again, and I spoke to a couple of people about this whole issue. I hesitate. What was I saying? Okay. I hesitate talking about drugs, but at the same time, like, it's such an important part of my story for me because I didn't think I had a problem at all with drinking. I thought that had gone away. I thought it was done. I just thought I was a drug addict. Just a drug addict, yeah. So my family and my boyfriend find this place in Florida. I'm like, Florida? That makes no sense. And they're like, well, you know, we have to move you away because if you're even close to a place where we can come get you, I'm sure you'll have one of us come get you. And they were right. So they flew me down here. And I was so angry, and I always had a temper, but I didn't realize, obviously, because I was just numbing out, how angry I was. And the more sober I got, you know, feelings, there they are. And the first 30 days, I didn't say anything. Kind of kept to myself, and I thought I was great. I almost said a great student, but like that's how I looked at treatment. Like, I'm gonna show up, I'm gonna do what I'm told, I'm gonna do my assignments. Like, I was not connecting that I was actually in rehab. It was just like, I just need to do these things and then leave. And then they said, well, you know, this is why you are so dangerous, because you don't think you have a problem. We're not even at the drinking problem yet. You don't even think you have like a problem. And I did. I knew I had a problem, but I didn't want to talk about it. And that's what you have to do in there. So they suggested that I stay for another 60 days. I was really upset. But I did it. And after a month, I think I was just so upset. My boyfriend broke up with me finally because he just didn't understand. He didn't get it. Lost my boyfriend. You know, my family doesn't want to talk to me. I've hurt so many people. And that's the thing about me, if you know me as a person. Like, I genuinely care about people. You know, and when I started to lose that, I was just so mad at myself. You know, not having the same kind of relationship with my mother or my sister or people who meant my boyfriend, who meant a lot to me. And there was just so much shame and guilt and just terrible feelings. And I just didn't even know where to start. So, like, for the first time, like, I was just like, fine. Like, I'm going to do what they say. Probably, you know, what's it going to hurt? And I started to get honest. And I started to do things that I didn't want to do. And, you know, when I left treatment, they told me to go to a halfway house. And that was disgusting to me. I am not going to a halfway house. But and they said, and we don't think you should go back home. And that just put me, like, in a very bad place because I did not want to stay here. I had no interest in staying here whatsoever. So, but I did those things. I went to a halfway house, And I was there for about a month and a half until everybody literally had either, like, relapsed or something. But I was the only one left in the halfway house, so I didn't think that I needed to be there anymore by myself. So I moved in with my brother for a little bit. He lives down here now. And I start to, you know, slowly get my stuff together. And, you know, throughout my life, or especially when I got sober, the concept of, like, time, that has been, you know, the biggest struggle for me because, you know, if there was a problem back in the day when I was drinking, I would find a way to solve that problem immediately, no matter what that looked like, because I was not going to have that problem anymore. But now there's problems, and now I have to, you know, do this thing to, like, you know, you have to have patience and, like, see what happens, and I don't know. And that's been really difficult for me, because I want what I want, and I want it right now. I'm going to do whatever that means to get that right now. And, you know, looking back on even just the small amount of time that I have in sobriety, there's so many things that I wanted in the beginning so badly, like would have given my life for. And looking back now, no joke, like, thank God those things didn't happen. You know, they told me to get a sponsor. I got the sponsor, and she kicked my ass. But that's what I needed. I needed somebody to call me out and get honest with me. And I wanted to then get honest with her. And she's like, don't talk to men. And I was like, well, we're going to have a problem with that. But the thing is, I didn't. I didn't for a long time. And I started to make friends. I mean, I had friends, but they were my drinking friends. I might have a couple now, but, like, the relationships that I have with women now are, it's really, and it's the most remarkable thing. It's something I never imagined with another. I mean, I have intimate relationships with women. You know what I mean? No, but, like, in a very, like, honest way. You know, it's just crazy because I was never that girl that was going to have these kinds of relationships with women, especially, like, the women I met down here. They're the friends for me. I feel cool because they let me hang out with them and spend time with them. And because for me, the women that are in my life are the most remarkable people. And they mean so much to me because they've been there. You know, I really struggled with God when I was getting sober. And I'm not going to lie, I still struggle with it now. But I've had these people in my life since I got sober that have just shown up and been there. And I don't have to look good. I don't have to be happy. I can be a mess. I can be whatever because we actually have that kind of relationship. And again, I just, that has been such a big part of my sobriety, and I do encourage that for any women in this program. Stick with the women. Find people that not just show up, but, you know, support and love you, and you show up for them too. Because it was all about me, and I was just, you know, in the beginning of sobriety, like, I just hated life. I didn't think that there'd be any fun. I would see people, like, going out and going bowling. I'm like, I hate bowling. That's going to be my life. And it was so miserable. But that's not true. I have not had to bowl ever. And and it's been a really good time. So that's what happened in early sobriety. And then as time went on, you know, and I have these great friends, and, you know, I started to go back. I'm in school right now. I go to USF. I work. I'm there full time. I have this job that I have no business having. You know, I never finished my degree. That's what I'm finishing right now. But this job, I work at the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay, and I actually have my own program there now. You know, I'd started there 3 years ago as a volunteer. And I love it there, and these are the things about sobriety. Like, I'm a facts person, and, like, this would have never happened if I didn't get sober. And things in my life, like the people I have in my life, they would never have existed if I didn't get sober. And I know, you know, getting sober in and of itself is an amazing thing, but all these other things are remarkable to me, because I would have never found them, ever. You know, so yeah, I can hate it here, and I got lost in the way here today, and I've been here for almost 4 years. But there's so many other things that I've been able to be grateful for that I know if I went back home, I would have never have had. And so I do. I have this great job, these great women in my life, and I get to sponsor amazing women. Corey, she just picked up 2 years today. I mean, it's the people that we get to reach out to. It's the people that we get to, you know, talk to. And, like, I remember being that girl. I see girls that look like me, and I'm like, I love them already because I know what that's like. Angry, pissed off. I used to go into meetings. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just a drug addict. So what's up? Like, what? No. But that's how I used to be. And, like, so I get it. So when I see girls like that, I love that. I absolutely love that because I know what that's like. So this whole experience, I mean, it's the most unreal thing I've ever done in my life, but it's really changed me to hopefully be a better person. And I'm just very grateful. So thank you for letting me share.